pleased to be here, and I thank Walter and Catherine for the invitation. We decided with Jean-Claude that this is the nicest math institute building that we ever saw. So, congratulations and best wishes for many good, interesting programs. So I will, since this is a colloquium, I will give a general description of the results, and then I will be a little more technical towards the end. Maybe we should turn the light off next to the screen. So I'm going to describe some results concerning the existence and uniqueness of the solution to the main equation of the ocean and atmosphere, the primitive equation. I'm not going to cover all of that, but I will give some point two and three, well, some of the points only. And this is for the collaboration. There are essentially two series of results which I will describe. One which corresponds to the first result that we had with Jacques Villions and Xuhong Wang. And then a series of results where that person has been involved, including Gioco Virozzo Estino, who is here. Well, when we started the program with Jacques Villions many years ago, the project was to, and which is still valid, is to develop some to develop some physically relevant model and to look for physically relevant model which can be amenable with to mathematical treatment for the atmosphere and the ocean, and to look for, to say what we can say on, for the mathematics of these equations and some other question. And it's a huge program, so it's still going on. To give you an idea of where we are, I am going to speak about which is a hierarchy of models in used in the atmosphere for atmosphere and oceans, and it's a hierarchy by physical complexity. So we would start at the top by the 3D Navier-Stokes equation, which would be completely out of reach for geophysical fluid dynamics because of the thin boundary layer, which we will never be able to resolve. And then the most important models are the hydrostatic models. The hydrostatic model corresponding to the primitive equation, they are at the center of what are called the general circulation model or ocean general circulation model. Sometimes the hydrostatic hypothesis, which I will describe, is not valid, so we have to consider non-hydrostatic models. There are many non-hydrostatic models, and physicists do not agree about the best one. Shallow water models, which are here in the hierarchy of physics, but which are rather higher as far as the mathematical complexity is concerned. And then the geostrophic, quasi-geostrophic model, and the barotropic equation. And as I said, I am going to concentrate on these equations. Ocean general circulation model. So I don't know how familiar you are, or maybe it's completely foreign to you. So let me spend a few minutes describing the primitive equation of the ocean, and then the primitive equation of the atmosphere. They start all from the basic laws of physics, conservation of momentum, continuity equation, conservation of mass, for the ocean the heat equation and the conservation of salinity. We had to this equation, an equation of state of this form. We take it here linearized around the state rho 0 T0 S0, but it could be as well a nonlinear equation of state. Rho is a function of T and S. So what we see here is that the unknowns are the velocity, which we decompose into the horizontal velocity and the vertical velocity, which play different roles. Here it's in spherical coordinate, if you consider the spherical coordinate, or we can also more simpler consider local models where, and we go to Cartesian coordinate, so it's whatever. So the unknowns are the velocity, horizontal and vertical components, the temperature, the salinity, the pressure, and the density. And from the basic equation, we make the fundamental assumption of Boussinesq assumption, that is to say, that's the classical hypothesis of that rho is constant except in the buoyancy term. So we get the usual, with that we get the usual equation of hydraulic. And then for the problem, we make the hydrostatic assumption, which means that because of the difference of size, in horizontal and vertical size, we don't treat in the same way the horizontal and vertical direction. And for the hydrostatic assumption, mean that we replace in the equation of conservation of vertical momentum, we replace it by the equation of static, which correspond to where we retain only the leading terms. You will see the equation in a moment. And then there is the fact that we replace r, the r theta phi of spherical coordinate, by a in the differential operator, which means which slightly change the metric of the problem, which produce sometimes some geometrical technicalities. So here are what we obtain. Now we obtain the primitive equation. So the first, the conservation of horizontal momentum. Then you see that the usual thing, except for the notation, where we have made a difference between horizontal and vertical velocity. This is the usual inertial term, this is a pressure term, this is a Coriolis term, and this is a viscosity, nothing special. This is a hydrostatic equation, which corresponds to the leading term, as I said, in the conservation of vertical momentum. We are in the Boussinesq system, so the conservation of mass reduces to the incompressibility condition, and the equation of temperature and salinity are the same as before. So at this stage, we distinguished the variables into two groups. What are called prognostic variables, for which we are going to obtain an evolution equation. We have to prescribe initial values, and we will have an evolution equation. So this is a group which we call symbolically U, the two components of the horizontal velocity, the temperature, and the salinity. And then there are the diagnostic variables, what are called the diagnostic variables, P, rho, and W, which are expressed at each time as function of the prognostic variable. If you are familiar with Navier-Stokes, incompressible Navier-Stokes equation, the velocity is for Navier-Stokes equation is a prognostic variable, and the pressure is diagnostic variable, because at each time you can determine it in terms of the velocity as by solving a Neumann problem. So that the situation is similar, but it's even simpler. Expressing rho in terms of T and S, that's the equation of state. For P and W, I have to be a little more specific, maybe say a few words if there is nothing in the transparencies about the boundary condition. So we have, and to specify the boundary condition, I have to give the domain, I have to do that. So that's the shape of the ocean in 3D. We call it M, the domain, or D, because omega is for the angular velocity in GFD. So gamma I is the upper boundary, the interface with the air. That's the bottom, gamma B. And here we do not go, we do not, so this is H, the depth. And we don't allow H to go to zero because of some singularity which appear sometimes, which we don't want to handle. So that's lateral boundary gamma L. So typically, boundary conditions are, well, here, for example, V and velocity is zero. Here also it's zero. Well, it's not really zero. It's something which is prescribed. But let us say zero. And here there are more complicated equations which correspond of Robin type, which correspond boundary condition, which correspond to the extents for the boundary layer, which we avoid, which we modelize. We model the boundary layer, and we obtain Robin type boundary condition. Yes, it's that's what is called the rigid lid hypothesis. We assume that Z equals zero is the top. Now, if you want to study the wavelets, the real surface, that you take a separate model, usually. Of what? No. Well, the motion is highly nonlinear. The boundary condition. Okay. I was not expecting to go into that, but I can tell you. Here you have a boundary layer. No, it's okay. You have a boundary layer, and for any reasonable model of GFD, we will not be able to resolve the boundary layer, which we would need a mesh of a type of 1 centimeter, while we are speaking about kilometers in the horizontal direction. So there is a modeling of the boundary layer which is mad, and there are models which you find in the book of Lichting, typically, all is there. And so you get, for example, for the temperature, you get something like that. Well, I put whatever constant, alpha 1 plus alpha 2. So you get a Neumann boundary condition. So it's T minus T of the TA is T of the atmosphere. So it's equal to zero. Well, it's alpha 1 dt dz equals a function of, it's a function of T, more precisely of T minus TA, and this depends on how far you want to go. So if you go to a linear model, you take that, but there are also motivation where you can go farther and take powers also, T minus TA times T minus TA to some power. Is I answered your question? Sort of, okay. Then we'll continue after. Okay, with that then we determine the diagnostic variables in terms of prognostic variables. For W, we integrate the incompressibility condition. Integrating from top to bottom, we get this constraint, and integrating from bottom to some point Z, we obtain W expressed in terms of V. So that's one. For P, it's the same. We take the hydrostatic, we consider the hydrostatic equation. We integrate it from top to Z, so that we obtain P times rho G, and rho is a function of temperature and salinity. So this is a linear function of T and S. And this appears the surface pressure PS. So now the unknowns we are left with are the prognostic variables VTS, symbolically denoted by U, and this surface pressure, so for which we obtain an equation which well, which is has more or less this form, may represent the viscous term, typically Laplacian or Stokes type operator, and this contains the nonlinear term and the lower order term. And there is this constraint which has appeared here, and this boundary condition. And then the last step is to observe that the pressure, surface pressure, is the Lagrange multiplier to this constraint, and so that by doing the, well, he did not say it in this way, but by doing what Leray did for the Navier-Stokes equation, we project on the space of function which satisfies this this constraint, which are incompressible in this sense, we obtain an evolution equation where PS has disappeared, and which takes this form, where R of U contains the nonlinear term, the Coriolis linear term, and some other lower order term. I will come back on this divergence condition, but I learned, actually, from Joko, that this condition expresses the incompressibility condition for a colon, a vertical colon of the fluid. So to understand the mathematical results and the fact that we have two steps in the derivation of the result, you have to look at the structure of a nonlinear term. So in terms of velocity, the main term is the horizontal velocity, v. And then you have the term like v dot grad v. So this is like in Navier-Stokes, that is to say, so that's Navier-Stokes. Then all the terms are like that, that it's velocity times derivatives of velocity. And here the primitive equation it's the horizontal velocity, so you have to look at this term. So this term is of the same type, but then you have to look at this term, W dV dZ. And W dZ dZ, dV dZ, so V is the horizontal velocity, so this is the derivative of the horizontal velocity, and W of V, if you, in some sense, it's an integral of divergence of V, so you can look at it in some way as the derivative of velocity, of horizontal velocity, times derivative of horizontal velocity. So in some sense, it's slightly less regular than the Navier-Stokes equation. Yes, the integral does not help. Well, it will help eventually, but if you count in a simple way. So, in general terms, now the type of result that we had initially with Lyons and Wang, okay, we treated things like that, and so we had some of the results for Navier-Stokes equation, and sometimes slightly less because of this increase. And now what happened since then in the series of papers by us and by others, what I will quote, is that we have, for this term, we have a non-isotropic treatment of a non-linear term. So in the initial treatment, we treated this term in an isotropic way, and now by a non-linear by a non-isotropic treatment of a nonlinear term, you will see what I mean, treating the vertical direction. So essentially, my collaborator and me and other people that I will quote, obtained, we obtain results for Navier, which are about the same as for Navier-Stokes equation incompressible. So we have the existence for all time of weak solution, so that we had it from the first result with Lyons and Wang. But what is new is now we have the existence of strong solutions for some time in 3D, And in 2D, we have existence and uniqueness of strong solution for all time. Uniqueness of weak solution is, depends on boundary conditions, so it's not... So I mentioned in the abstract, but I did not mention yet here, that you, all the results can be found in the article with Jan. There is a review article which appeared in the, which is due to appear in the handbook of mathematical fluid dynamics, which is edited by Susan Friedlander and Denis Serre. Have one or two copies if you are willing, if you are interested to carry. Better. So, let me state the result, and as I said, later on I will give some details on some of the proofs. So this is the theorem are stated in a slightly fuzzy way so that we don't put too much material on the transparency, but all the precise statements are either in the original papers or in the article with Jan. So the global existence of weak solution, this was the first result with in the early 1990s with Lyons, Jacques Lyons and Wang. And what we call in fluid mechanics, in compressible fluid mechanics, weak solution, that is to say the solution were for the velocity and then here it's the analog for the other quantity. They are L infinity in L2 and L2 in the H1 norm for all time, and the pressure is surface pressure is slightly less regular than in the case of Navier-Stokes, which is one of the effects of being slightly less regular than Navier-Stokes. So the result was proved for 3D at that time, but the proof of course applies to 2D, so there is nothing. So now the other result, which have been proved by Fang Minghu and Xian and Gonzalez, Masmoudi and Rodriguez. Now this local existence in time two different proofs. So it's the local existence, local in time existence and uniqueness of strong solution is the usual terminology of fluid mechanics. That is to say solution which are in L infinity of H1 and L2 of H2. And the surface pressure is in L2 of L2. And as in 3D Navier-Stokes, it's a local result, of course. You cannot expect to do better. Now, there has been also results for dimension 2. The result for dimension 2 is the existence and uniqueness for all time of a strong solution in 2D. So there are several results corresponding to different boundary conditions and different situations. Xian, an unpublished paper, the result with space periodic case, I will mention it with Madalina Pekou and Joko, and Brech, Kazikov and Lemoine. And also something else in the paper with the... as I said, it's the terminology of used in incompressible fluid mechanics. The weak solution is the solution which has kinetic energy bounded for all time, and the H1 norm, the entropy norm, L2 on finite time. And the strong solution are the solution which have H1 norm bounded for all time and the H2 norm L2 for finite time. And you, no, Galerkin method, approximation method. But the difference, it's not so much, the difference is that there is a kind of threshold from, of regularity once we get a strong solution for Navier-Stokes. Once we get strong solution, regularity H2, then we have all sorts of regularity as much as allowed by the domain. Now, here in fluid mecha- in the ocean, it's not the case. It's not the case because of the corners. I will come back to that. Because of the corners, there are limitations of regularity. You cannot go beyond H2 regularity. It's not H3 regularity is not valid. So except for that, but the interior regularity, it's no problem. But strictly speaking, here, for the purpose of the lecture, the strong solution are the solution which are L infinity of H1 and L2 of H2. Sorry? There are some results of uniqueness, but proof depends on the boundary condition. It's not... Yeah. It's slightly more complicated. Well, I read some result of uniqueness, but I was not motivated enough. I was happy with the strong solution. And no, it's not. Well, this is not an. No, this is a property. It's not an assumption here. Oh well. I don't know if it is L infinity of H1, whatever. Here my terminology is L infinity of H1 and L2 of H2. Oh, there are many sorts of results where if you have a certain level of regularity, then you get much more, but I'm not trying to refine in that direction. I'm just considering two cases. So, and there are also higher results of higher regularity, which we develop up to C infinity regularity, which we develop with Madalina and Joko, and in the space periodic case. So, we don't have boundary, we don't have a corner, and we saw that the equation, we did it because we had some other motivation, but what it shows is that the equation does not have a potential for blocking regularity, so it can go as far as you want. So after I finish the general presentation, I will say a few things about the two VES2 results. The local in time existence of strong solution in 3D, and I will show you the key point of the proof, and in dimension 2, the existence of uniqueness of strong solution for all time. Okay, let me continue for another 10 minutes or so with a general description of results. Yes. For the linear operator? Yes, we spent a lot of energy on the regularity. I will come to that. Yes, it's, we need to prove the regularity of the linear operator, yes. Well, once you prove that the linear operator is... the linear operator is... the Stokes-type operator is like an elliptic operator. It's, I'm not sure I understand your question. No, we don't need this kind of result. No, we don't need. We just need that the inverse is compact and that it's self-adjoint. The inverse is compact, and what we need is the PDE result of H2 regularity. So precisely, this is the. What is hidden, some of the mathematical difficulties which are hidden in the Edwards result, this transparency, and the next one will show that. So first there is what I have called the Stokes operator, the Stokes GFD operator, which has appeared here. So this is the operator. Laplacian here is a 2D Laplacian. So this is a 3D Laplacian. Stands for horizontal velocity, so it's a 2D vector. So we are in the 3D domain like this one. This is we have a 2D vector because we have to think of the horizontal velocity. We apply the 3D Laplacian to the 2D vector, The gradient of the PS. PS is the surface pressure defined on a 2D domain, the interface with gamma I. And so this is the horizontal gradient of the 2D of the pressure. So it's a 2D vector. And so that's the equation instead of what we have for the usual Stokes problem. That's the incompressibility type condition as which has appeared, and which can be interpreted as here as the incompressibility of a colloid of fluid, and the boundary condition of a problem. So you observe that by simple integration by part that the gradient of PS is orthogonal to V, and this amounts to saying that that PS is the Lagrange multiplier for this constraint, and this is the basis for the writing the formulation, Lurie type formulation for the equation, the space which appears is here. There are other things, but okay, that's a simplified description of the space. And it's orthogonal, is that's correct. It's the gradient of function. Now, for the PDE result, point, from the PDE point of view result, we spent a lot of time. Substantial amount of the paper is about the regularity of this result. Like for Stokes, like for the Dirichlet problem, we want to know if f is the typical elliptic result, is that if f is in HM, the solution v is in HM plus 2. So this is 2, and we do need it at m equals 0. If f is in L2, the solution is in H2. So this is true. This is mostly Zian's work. He started on that since his thesis. And there are limitations because of a corner. So we have to go into the theory of the question of regularity of elliptic problems in this domain with corners. And we know the limitation that if f for sure, we know that if there are counterexamples, but if f is in H1, u is not expected, the velocity is not expected to be in H3. Okay, but we know that there are limitations, but at least it is true that if f is in L2, then v is in H2, and this is the H2 regularity. But Jan proved in his thesis for Dirichlet boundary condition, and then we had to work it out for more general boundary conditions, the one I described here. And it's true. And the other mathematical difficulty hidden there is, well, we have to, if we work on the sphere, then we have to deal with geometry, the Laplacian of spherical coordinate. Then we learned the Laplacian of the tangents and vector. We learned on this occasion that the Laplacian is not uniquely defined for a vector on a manifold, but this is what is called the Laplacian we use is the Lichnerowitz Laplacian, which gives this form of the Stokes formula with the term which is here. Like when A is the radius of the Earth, when A goes to infinity, we go to the flat case, and so this term disappears, which is not usual, of course, in Cartesian. So those are some of the difficulties hidden in the. I will spend 5-10 more minutes describing rapidly the equation for the atmosphere and then for the coupling. What is different, because many things are similar, so I will just say what is different. For the atmosphere, the same unknown, well, the same equation, more or less, conservation, the velocity is the composite with horizontal component and vertical component, conservation of horizontal momentum, the hydrostatic equation which replaces the... So we don't do the air is slightly compressible, so we cannot assume that it is incompressible. We cannot use the Boussinesq approximation. But we do use the hydrostatic equation, which represents the leading term of the vertical momentum equation. the continuity equation is like that, and it's well, there is nothing to do for it about it at this point. The energy equation, the conservation of energy, the heat equation is slightly more complicated because of the compressibility, the fact that the quantity of air just by raising is expanding, so there are some thermodynamic effects, so it's slightly, there is this new term compared to the water. The equation of state is the equation of Pfeffer gas, and this time we don't have salinity, but instead we have an equation of concentration of humidity. We could also put concentration of other pollutant, but it does not give rise to any other mathematical difficulty. Now, the nice thing which allows us to do the mathematics somehow, like for the incompressible case, is to observe that, and people do that in this is to observe that because of the incompressibility equation, dP dz equals minus rho g, so p is a decreasing function of rho of z, and this is where there is some limitation of the hydrostatic model, because sometimes when some instabilities occur, there are some higher pressure which are quantity of higher pressure air which are above lower pressure air, so that this is not valid anymore, and you need a non-hydrostatic model. But most of the time the hydrostatic hypothesis is valid, and because P is a decreasing function of Z, then we can take P as the vertical component, so which means by isobars instead of vertical. So that instead of theta phi and P and theta phi z and t, or x, y, z and t in the Cartesian case, we go to theta phi P and t, or x, y, P and t. And some of the equations are not much changed, but what is really interesting is that the continuity equation, the conservation of mass, is completely changed, and it becomes like the incompressibility equation, provided we replace we consider the vertical velocity omega. Omega is not W. Omega is the vertical velocity expressed in this new coordinate system, in the P variable. So that's the conservation of horizontal momentum. That's the hydrostatic equation, where now this phi is the geopotential, is Gz. Z is a function of other quantities. And the equation of energy is here, and the equation for the humidity is here. Yes. Where is Joko? He's not here. He left. Ah, he's here. Can you help? Should we include the humidity? No, the salinity. Well, in the ocean you worry about the salinity. maybe no. But it affects the mixture. It affects the density of the mixture, maybe. My answer, if we'll discuss that, but my first answer would be that this affects the what you are thinking about is the density of the mixture, but the air by itself is not affected by the humidity. It's too fluid. Well, that's my first answer, like that. Prognostic. Q is a prognostic, and P is, well, P is an independent variable now, and rho is a diagnostic variable. Yes. Yes.
perform that analysis is very easy to make it as something. Mm-hmm. And then only when you have a, you know, changes of phase, phase changes.
No, but the thermodynamics does not relate to the humidity by itself. It relates to the properties of the air to expand and compress.
Right, as far as the humidity remains, it's the way your brain is the one that is the fact
that it's
not. Because
we don't have that data. Yes, but that's a good question. I'll try to answer to it later on. But, my guess is that is what I told you, but I want to make sure that it's correct. Too fluid, yes, it's a too fluid. So now here is the same thing with the separation between prognostic and diagnostic variables. So the prognostic variables are this one, U, V, horizontal velocity, temperature, humidity, concentration of humidity, and phi s, which is here. And the diagnostic variables, rho, which is not here, but rho is P equals rho RT, so it's clear rho is expressed in terms of prognostic variables. Omega is the same as before, no, because the equation is the same. And for the geopotential, we integrate the hydrostatic equation, and we get this type of thing where pops in the phi s, which is the value of phi. Well, I should say that we are considering P between two values. We are considering P between two isobar P0 above the Earth. So this one is P1 and P0. And I'm not sure which one is which. And so phi s is the height, is g times the height of this isobar, lowest isobar that you consider. And again, phi s plays the role of the Lagrange multiplier for the constraint concerning the velocity, which is here, so that in first stage you write this system, and in the second stage you project a la Leray, and phi s disappears, and you obtain for you an evolution equation. Okay, the results are of the same type. I don't need to go into the details. And the last thing about modeling that I will mention is the coupling of the atmosphere and the ocean. When this is the same thing, then we have one variable then, which is eta. It's a normalized value of the pressure of P. P is normalized so that eta is between 0 and 1, and in the ocean eta is Z, so that eta is positive in the atmosphere and negative in the ocean. And the equation consists of the equation of the atmosphere, the equation of the ocean, and the interface equation, which are, again as before, in a slightly different form, the equation of the boundary layer, both for the air and the ocean. Okay, I skip the detail, but at the end we get a system which has the same similar form. And we get the same type of results. Although the Stokes problem is slightly more involved, but it has to be addressed. So let me, for the last 15 minutes now, go into the mathematics, more technical mathematical details. Can we raise the screen? Yes, yes, yes. This is, again, like for the ocean, it's a fixed interface. It's the rigid lead assumption. So the interface is Z equals 0, eta equals 0. Which means two things. First, on the ocean, we don't take into account of the waves, and they have to be modeled by a different model. And in the atmosphere, we are studying the part of the atmosphere between two isobars, P0 and P1, with P1 slightly above the Earth and P0 high enough. And why do we do that? We don't want to go to zero for P for two reasons. For the physics, because it's you got into ionized gas if you go too high, and so the equation has to be changed. And for the mathematics, because we don't want the independent variable to vanish, so you don't want the, sometimes P appears in the denominator, and you don't want to get into trouble with that. So that's for one thing. Now, for P, then there is this region, which is a thin region, like the region here, and which has to be studied by a different wave model, different model. So I don't go into that. But the physicists insist that it's important, and they have, it has to be handled by a separate model. More questions about this? Can we raise the screen? Thank you. So, for example, the result of existence and uniqueness, local in time, existence and uniqueness. So, for the local in time, existence and uniqueness. A strong solution in 3D. The important thing, which is through a non-isotropic treatment of a non-linear term. And essentially, we get the usual, we get close to the usual Navier-Stokes equation. So we get, for the fluid mechanics part, we get the integral over the domain. I will forget the other part because it's the same. So you get the V grad V term. So I make it different. So V grad V star V tilde. So that's the usual term. And then you get the term which is specific, which is slightly different, is W. Now W is W of V. W of V is expressed through the diagnostic equation. Times dV star over dt times W dt. So this term is like Navier-Stokes, horizontal velocity times derivative of horizontal velocity, but this term is what I call in a simplified description the derivative of the horizontal velocity times derivative of the horizontal velocity. Now we are going to make things slightly more refined. So we need an estimate on B. Well, for the first result, you just say that B is trilinear continuous, but it's still true. And this is how we got the result, the first result with Lyons and Wang. B is still trilinear continuous on H1. Here, of course, there are the other terms, but I just concentrate on the term coming from the velocity, that's enough. So this is still true, and as I said, it was known for a long time, and this is how we prove the first result with Lyons and Wang. Now you need for, if you want to go into strong solution, you need other types of results, because usually what you do, you multiply the equation by AU, so you need to know that U is in H2, and so on. So how do we So I don't set a lemma, I will just show you how we do, we perform the calculation. So how do we estimate these two terms? I'm going to show you how we estimate in a non-isotropic way these two terms. Well, the first term is estimated in the usual way. That is to say, for the result that I'm going to give you, this is in L6, this is in L2. Holder inequality, and this is in L3, and this is L2. So we apply Holder inequality like that. So you bound this by V in L6, gradient of V star in L2, and V tilde. So this is not this is still isotropic. This is but the non-isotropic estimate will come after. but this will serve as a point of comparison with what I'm going to do. So this is C, V in H1. This is L3. So this is V star in L3 half, and V tilde in L2. And in fact, for our purpose, it's enough even to write CV in H1, V star in H2. So we lose a little piece of information here, but it's not important. And then, as I said, the term, the other term is, has to be treated in a non-isotropic way. So that is to say, we are not going to treat all directions of the same type. We are going to use Fubini and to write this as the integral on gamma I, the integral from minus h to zero of the same thing. Dz, d gamma I. All this absolute value, of course. And we are going to use a different holder in Z and in gamma. This is what I mean, but it's slightly tricky. So for the first one, for Z, we use L infinity, L2, L2. So we bound this by integral over gamma I, phi of W in L infinity of Z. Well, the notation here is clear. For each Z, we consider L infinity of the of a function, so dv star over dz in L2 of z, and still in L2 of z gamma. And then we apply a different holder here for the horizontal direction. We are going to do it L4. Oh no, well, one thing here, that's the easy part, W of V. W of V is the integral of, the integral from minus H to Z of plus or minus divergence of V dz prime. So you get W of V then infinity of Z. You bound it, of course, by the bound on the total height times the divergence of V in L2 of Z. You write Schwarz inequality and you bound it in this way. So you bound it here by integral over gamma I divergence of V in L2 of C dz star over dz in L2 of Z and V tilde in L2 of Z. Now these two terms are similar at this stage. And so we are going to treat them in a similar way, L4, L4, L2. So you get h bar 1 half, what I call divergence of V in L2 of L4 of gamma I, L2 of Z. And V tilde in L2 of gamma I, L2 of Z. This term, by just by Fubini again, it's V tilde in L2 of M. And this term, well, I'm going to, I don't want to bother you use calculation, I want to leave 5 minutes of the two decays. This term, you bound it at the end by you bound it by V H1 one half, V H2 one half, and V star H1 one half, V star H2 one half, and V tilde in L2. But here, of course, what we do here is to use the Ladizenskaya inequality. So you call C the divergence of V in L2 of Z. So this is a function of xi equals xi of x and y, or theta and phi if you are on the sphere. and you are interested by the L4 norm of Xi. So you bound it by the inequality of Ladislavskaya, Xi in L2. So this is in gamma I, 1/2, and gradient of Xi in L2 of gamma I, 1/2. Now Xi being this norm. So you have to do the calculation and you get at the end, you get that. Now for the two decays, what is the trick? What is special for the two decays and the space periodic case? So this is a paper with Madalina Picou and Foucault. The estimates are, well, first the problem in a few words, we have a space periodic problem, but because of the hydrostatic equation, it cannot be plane space periodic. It has to be slightly, we have to be slightly careful. So the domain is like that. We write the domain from minus L3 over 2 to L3 over 2. And we, so all the functions are periodic, U, V, P, W, Z, U, rho are periodic. But we restrict ourselves to a special class of symmetry for which the equations are invariant, U, V, P even in Z, and W, rho odd. So this is what we have to consider, because as I said, we cannot just take space periodic and have this equation satisfied. So once you do that, you write the equation, they are the same. And the trick here, I think this is Jan who found it first in his unpublished paper, which is very typical of him to publish important papers. And you have to do it in sequence. You cannot get the result for all the variables at the same time. So first you work with the U equation. You get something for UZ. That is to say, you consider the U equation. You differentiate it in Z. You multiply by dZ of U. You do the estimates of classical then, of classical type, and then you get that UZ, dZ of U, is in L2 of L infinity of L2. So we are going to get the strong solution by step, L infinity of S2 and L2 of L2. I intend to get to L2 of H2, L2 of H1. That is to say, you get that U, that's not the derivative, dZ of Z, Z of U, and dZx of U are in L2 of L2. Then you do it for dX of U. And the order in which you can do it is not arbitrary. This is the order which works. So you differentiate in X the equation for the U equation. You multiply by dx of u. You perform the estimate. You use the previous estimate, of course. And you get that u dx of u is in L infinity of L2 and L2 of H1. That is to say, you have proved that dx z of u, dx x of u, are in L2 of L2. And then once you are there, things work for all terms at the same time, or maybe all them at once, I don't remember. So you get VZ, VX, DZ of V, DX of V, DZ of Rho, DX of Rho, no, not Rho, sorry, T. They are all L infinity of L2 and L2 of H1, which means things like that, and then you have everything to get that the solution is L2 of L infinity of H1 and L2 of H2 for all finite time. I think I will stop here. There are, of course, many more results and many more problems in GFD, and I don't think that everything has been said. Thank you.